Welcome to the Frictionless Innkeeper Podcast. Our show is brought to you by the Frictionless Guest App, which allows innkeepers to provide guests with their recommendations of the best local places to eat, play, and shop during their stay. The Frictionless Guest App is accessible through all mobile and desktop devices, and you can learn more about it by visiting frictionlessguest.com. Once again, that's frictionlessguest.com. I'm Matt Langan, and I'll be joined by Steve Short, the founder and CEO of the Frictionless Guest App. And for this episode, we are speaking with Marilyn Bushnell, the founder of Bushnell Services, where she serves as a broker and consultant working with buyers and sellers in the unique lodging, inn, and bed and breakfast industry throughout the U.S. We're also joined by Elliot Dalton, who's also an innkeeping consultant and broker specializing in helping people buy and sell inns, and he's a partner to Marilyn. And we actually recorded a version of this podcast in early March with Marilyn and Elliot, but we decided to do a re-record because the world has changed tremendously when it comes to the COVID-19 pandemic. And for this episode, we'll be diving into services that Marilyn and Elliot offer, as well as key industry trends in the face of the pandemic. And Marilyn and Elliot and Steve, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Steve, how are you doing?
Doing well, Matt. Thanks, Elliot. Thanks, Marilyn, for being here.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, much like we did in the pre-recording or our early March recording before the world changed, let's start at the top. And if you don't mind, tell us about your backgrounds, because both of you were former innkeepers. And we'll go with Marilyn first.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I would say that my husband and I were the classic innkeeper, bed and breakfast inn buyer. Both worked in the corporate world in professional positions for about 20 years, enjoyed our time there, but were ready to move on and seek other forms of employment, particularly owning our own business. And we chose my dream, which was to buy a bed and breakfast inn. And we also made the decision that we wanted to buy an existing B&B versus making a decision to start one from the ground up. So my husband, being the trained engineer that he was, decided that he'd put a great deal into research, both from a location standpoint and from a performance of the inn standpoint, because we wanted to buy an inn that had a great location, good success story, and an opportunity to improve it and to grow with it. That's how we started. Now, this is, you know, back in the olden days, I'll call it, when the internet was not really a great way to search for a property. We had to do it the old-fashioned way by looking at a lot of different guidebooks and talking to a number of individuals and talking to some brokerage houses where properties might be available. So we had a little bit harder, I think, homework back then than it is today, but certainly had the opportunity to examine a number of different properties and make that selection. And then ended up buying an inn in Easton, Pennsylvania, the Lafayette Inn, which is an 18-room inn next to a college.
Excellent. Awesome. Elliot, would love to hear your background.
Sure, Matt. Ours was a little different. I was an offshore tugboat captain, my wife a graphic designer. And when we decided to take the big leap into innkeeping, Marilyn brought this memory back that, yeah, it was a lot more difficult to find properties that were available. There was a section in the New York Times called Inns and Lodges for Sale. And that was the go-to place. And they usually had three or four listings there. And that is how we found our inn in upstate New York. We had a 15-room inn with a full-service restaurant. And we developed a residential art program. So our business was having artists come in for the week to take classes from a particular artist, and we provided them with all their food and lodging in a studio. And we did that for 15 years. And in 2005, when we sold, I became a licensed agent in five states and started working exclusively with inns and B&Bs and have been doing it ever since. And it's been an interesting time through the 2008-09 and now the 2020 downturn. So it makes it exciting for everybody. Some, if you're in a buyer's seat, a little bit more exciting than if you're in a selling seat. But we'll talk about that.
Yeah, great. Yeah, before we dive into some of the COVID trends or things happening out in the marketplace, just quickly tell us a little bit more about your services for buyers and sellers. And we'll go with Marilyn first.
Okay. In some respects, we are very similar to a traditional real estate brokerage house. I am a broker in Maryland and Pennsylvania, but serve as a consultant throughout the rest of the country. And we can work with our sellers of inns by really taking a very thorough look at the property through valuing it, through visiting the property, through understanding what its business success looks like, and come up with what is a reasonable and defensible value and price for that property. And then we market it very similar to what a real estate broker might do, but through our niche industry. A, because we know the industry and we're going to use our various techniques in which to market it, and certainly online through our own sites as well. For buyers, we either work with buyers directly through a contact to us on the internet or phone, or they attend one of our classes in the past and to learn how to buy and run a bed and breakfast inn. So we develop a relationship through a variety of ways. Probably about half of our buyers have come through our classes, and we help them examine what their needs are and really what the whether or not this property fits them both personally and as a business. So we work with either one very, very closely to help them meet their needs in either selling or buying an inn.
All right, great. Thanks, Marilyn. Elliot, you want to tell us a bit more about your services?
Sure. I mean, each of us works independently, and we also work together as colleagues and partners in various aspects, either with buyers or with sellers. I would just expand a little bit on the valuation. So we approach that the same way an appraiser would. We don't call it an appraisal because we're not certified appraisers, but appraisers come to us for the data because we sell more bed and breakfast and small lodging properties than anybody else. So we have the data, and we use an appraisal method where we look at cost, asset, and business approaches to value. And it's a pretty comprehensive way of doing it. Because of COVID, we are starting to list properties in a different way. We will attempt to get somebody in the local area to do the site visit for us, either an appraiser or a real estate agent that we've known, so that they can give us a good idea of condition and all the rest of it. Also, in looking at that, it's going to be a different process, but one that can still be done with good accuracy. And with buyers, it's always going to be the same. It's the relationship. And we try to match their financial goals and their business goals together and find the property that best suits them. And it's always, for both of us, since we were in the business, it's been a pleasure. It's always a pleasure to work in this business.
That's great. And it's certainly an interesting time in this business with the COVID-19 pandemic. And let's switch over to that part of the discussion. And overall, what are you seeing out there in the marketplace when it comes to buying and selling of inns? And we'll go with Marilyn on that one first.
Sure. Well, we were going like gangbusters at the beginning of the year. Things were moving along both at the buying and selling level. Had a number of individuals had contracts that were in place, and come mid-March, when all of us got the word to shut down, all of our innkeepers had to really go with that process, unless, of course, they were serving an essential personnel environment, but still made a very significant cutback on their business. With that in mind, buyers, many of our buyers really kind of took a step back and said, I'm going to hold off on that contract, or I'm going to stop looking for property right at this point in time. And even really many of our sellers, they really just had to kind of go in a holding pattern, I would say from mid-March until about mid-May. But around mid-May, things started to wake up a bit. Either properties start booking a few things come June, or our buyers started to, they either got bored or they were ready to move forward. And we've had really buyers seeing property, evaluating them, and putting contracts in since that time. So the activity seems to have picked up in the buying and selling industry for us. We also, since closed on a property. Yes, we did get through a settlement on a rather large inn in Georgia through this entire process. And I'll let Elliot tell you a bit more about it because it did involve an SBA loan. And we were able to continue with some other contracts. So that's all seems to be going strong right now and hopefully can continue, knock on wood, in the future.
So Marilyn, before Elliot kind of jumps in, let me ask, are you, and maybe Elliot will get into this as well, but sounds like you had your prior clients kind of coming back into the fray in May. Are you seeing new people? Because, you know, there's obviously with the downturn, you're going to have maybe existing owners who are saying, I want out. And you've got new people who are saying, oh, well, we were thinking about this before and it was, you know, we couldn't get the place, we couldn't afford the place we wanted, but now we can, we're willing to take a chance. Or, I mean, how many new people are kind of coming into this, buyers and sellers, versus people just picking up where they left off before?
No, actually a fair number of new individuals. I would say working with buyers, which, you know, is probably the more surprising, but we have buyers who are either saying, I want out of my corporate job or whatever job it is that's left, and I want to go ahead and purchase a property now. I think the timing might be well. I think the terms of price might be more negotiable. So we do have the buyers that are out there, and they're new. They're new to us, and Elliot will comment on his as well. So they are out there. And of course, there are some of those sellers who were thinking about selling and absolutely said, you know what, it's time. I'm not going to be able to turn this on as strong as I'd like for 2020, but we were thinking about selling anyhow, and we do want to move forward with taking a look at that.
Right. Interesting. Okay.
Elliot, how about your thoughts?
Yeah, it was interesting because there was an appraiser friend who did a podcast just a couple of days ago and really spoke to the hotel industry and how devastated that is because there are so many of them that are urban-based and need that foreign travel, need that conference travel, and all the things that a city brings that are now closed. So there's a disproportionate, you know, deterioration of hotels' income in the urban areas compared to rural. And the same thing is happening with small lodging, but to a lesser extent, because as we spoke earlier, that the smaller properties, A, are more flexible, can go after different revenue streams, and are safer in the eyes of the consumer. Safety is first, and where can you socially distance? Where do you know that somebody's taking extra precautions? Well, they're going to be smaller properties. So I see with our new listings, the ones that have contracts that we're in contract with are in rural areas, and they have the outdoors to market. And so that is appealing to everyone. And our buyers come from a variety of things. I mean, Marilyn and I are sharing this one, and it's about 50% wanting to buy a bed and breakfast and 50% having a large property to have big family outings. So you never know who, you know, the motivation of the buyers will be. But in the others, it's certainly they're going after a business and they see this as an opportunity to get in and in the next 18 to 24 months, build the business and be well positioned when COVID finally gets under control, however that is and however much it can be under control. So the terms that it's more difficult to get a mortgage, there's no doubt about that. And buyers have to know that, and they have to bring more money to the table to complete a transaction. But I'm busy. I'm very busy. And unfortunately, I can see on the horizon that we'll be looking at compromised properties. I know of two already that have gone into bankruptcy.
Right. And that is going to happen in our industry, just as, you know, other parts of the industry in hospitality, it's happening.
Interesting. Hey, Steve, should we pivot and talk about some of the stuff that we were talking about before we hit the record button about what we're seeing in the marketplace just from kind of our friends and people we know that are innkeepers.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, in terms of what's going on out there, yeah, we've been doing some talking and some of the Frictionless Guest app clients and, you know, trying to stay in touch and find out what's going on. And yeah, we're hearing, yeah, that, of course, you've got reopenings and then there's spikes and all of that, but that things have been pretty, you know, anecdotally, that things have been pretty good all in all, that people, it seems that people want to, you know, get out. There's kind of this pent up demand now that things are starting to open up, but also, you know, they want to travel closer, you know, not too far, drive to where they can stay. And certainly what I think what I guess Elliot was talking about with the rural destinations, they seem to be, you know, more trusting because you don't have a whole bunch of people gathered together. And, but in addition, the smaller, the bed and breakfast, the inns or whatever, yeah, there seems to be more of a trust level there that, hey, well, you know, the owner, manager, whomever, whoever's responsible for this thing is going to take care of us. I mean, because they're small and, hey, they're kind of a part of this too. They live here basically. So anyway, that's kind of what we've been seeing.
And I would agree with that as well. Just in the inns that we are talking to and or visiting locally, they're getting really a fabulous comeback in the rural areas. I think I mentioned to you prior to this is that I, you know, was visiting one inn over the weekend, and he said it's his best July ever, double of what it was last July. So who knew that that would happen in these more rural environments? So they are taking advantage of the opportunity, getting some business back, getting some bills paid, but recognize that we're not over this and some things can happen in the future that they need to be prepared for as well. So they're not taking it lightly in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, the drive to destinations, obviously, you know, we predicted that even in our last podcast, drive to rural, all of that. And I must stress that those people who are in an urban area that depended on OTAs, depended on other revenue streams rather than leisure are hurting. The leisure travel is what's making a big comeback. Unfortunately, you know, a month and a half ago, I talked to somebody in Santa Fe and they too were having just a gangbuster June. And then, you know, as of July 1st in New Mexico, they just closed it down. I mean, you 2 week quarantine, no matter what. I mean, you can't get a test within 72 hours, like so many states allow. It's completely closed down. So it's going to go like this, since it's going to be state by state. There doesn't seem to be a national protocol. So you're going to see big spikes. I was up in the Adirondacks and the Hudson River Valley working and stopped in at a lot of inns and they were fully booked. So that's all well and good, but it's going to be a rocky course until it's under control. Another thing that's really interesting is, you know, we've mentioned it before, urban flight. And out of all the urban centers, whether it be Boston or Atlanta or New York or wherever, it's surprising what it's doing to the residential real estate market. Applications for mortgages are up 15, 20% month over month for the last 2 months. Real estate is a hot commodity. So that the smaller B&Bs that I've been talking to and starting to list, we also list them in addition to where our platforms that we use with a local broker so they can get on the MLS and be marketed as a perfect home for a larger family who is now working remotely. And it's an ideal place for that. I've seen a lot of that on Long Island, up the Hudson River Valley in Connecticut, mostly from New York, but I'm sure it's happening out of all other cities. So it's kind of a new way. If you have a smaller B&B, if you have a, you know, 5, 6, 7 room B&B or less, these could be marketed to them if you're within an hour and a half of a big city. That's a whole new twist that we've seen in the last few months.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame to hear because it means less B&Bs and inns, especially the smaller ones, which I tend to prefer. But anyway.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, the hotel industry is predicting, you know, they don't predict a recovery to ADR and occupancy and everything else till 2023. And it's going to be shorter for small lodging properties because they can ride these waves. A hotel has to make, you know, they've got their break-even point And they have to constantly decide whether or not they got to close for a period of months. Does that make more fiscal sense? With a smaller B&B, you can stay open and ride these waves, hopefully, when your state got the control over the virus, and then ride out the the crests or the waves. But you can adapt a lot quicker. And so I think that the recovery time for these smaller properties will be quicker.
Interesting. Steve, should we talk a little bit about the AHLA study that we were referencing earlier? Because that could be some interesting news for inns. Basically, it's saying that 68% of travelers, 44% of Americans are planning trips in 2020, which is not really that great. That's less than half. But 68% are more likely to stay in a hotel, which could possibly mean that's good for B&Bs. And that points to that people are probably staying away from Airbnbs just for out of fear and for safety reasons.
Yeah, like Airbnb and VRBO. Yeah, because I think there's an assumption that, well, we don't really know who's in charge, you know, that even though I would think B&Bs, again, are more trusted than the hotels, and Marilyn had said something about elevators and all that. But
I'm not so sure I agree with that, at least based on what I'm seeing. Home rentals, physical rentals of properties are actually, from what I see, running fairly strong because it is a separate, unique, distinct environment. True, it's still much more limited on the cleaning guarantees that are happening there. But individuals do like privacy. Even with our lodging properties, the ones that have private entrances, the ones that might have cabins or unique properties unto themselves, are renting extremely well because, again, it privatizes that property for that guest and makes them feel that much more safe and secure from other individuals. So I think there's still some real potential, at least from a numbers standpoint. I think Airbnb's numbers are also, from what I saw, doing fairly well right now. So I think it's the small properties, and Airbnb kind of fits into that little bit of a model in a unique sort of way. I think it's the hotels that are going to have the real struggle over the next year.
Yeah, I would agree with Marilyn. I've seen an uptick also. You know, I use AirDNA analytics to help buyers take a look at different markets. And I've seen some upticks in a lot of areas. It's going to be very local. It's going to be state by state because, you know, once again, COVID is directing this. And so when COVID's down, everybody feels free to travel. When COVID goes up, like New Mexico or Texas or Florida, you know, who's going to hop on a plane and go there? Not so many people. But short-term rental does allow for seclusion if it's a standalone property. So I know AHLA, I get all their statistics too, but I also get, you know, on the ground, and we tried to rent a couple of places, one in Block Island, and they're fully booked. I mean, that's a vacation spot anyway, I get it. But I think that statistic has to be looked at with a little skepticism. Unfortunately.
Well, and I think that was a conclusion that we were talking about, not that AHLA had necessarily come to. And I guess I should have probably caveated that by saying that, you know, at least the Airbnb and VRBO thing, again, I think it's more a rural concern. And you're right. We go every year to Lake Anna in Virginia, and we're going in late August. And I had called the person who owns the place where we stay, and she said that, yeah, they're booked all the way through till after Labor Day. And again, this is anecdotal, but then somebody else who does the books for a bunch of properties in a West Virginia town said they were booked, you know, and like the whole town was booked in like April, and a lot of people were coming in from New York and all of that. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's, again, it's that urban flight sort of thing, and the feeling that, okay, yeah, if we're in our own space, our own house, our own cabin or whatever, then we don't have to interact with other people. I think there's definitely that feeling. I think, you know, if you've got a bunch of properties in, you know, in a city with Airbnb, I mean, maybe people would rather travel, go there than stay at a hotel. I'm not sure, but maybe it's just the fact that, you know, the urban areas, you know, unless you have to go, you're not going to go, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's exactly what we're seeing. We're not hearing the urban properties faring as strongly. So probably no matter what you have, however you exist, you might go smaller rather than larger and take a look at it from a cleanliness standpoint. But yeah, the urban is, when they were always some of the strongest numbers out there, are really hurting the most at this point in time. I really do feel for them.
Oh, yeah. And what's, you know, to that point, it's 180 degrees from what we would always advise buyers. And that is that, you know, you look for multiple revenue streams, you know, so that if you do weddings, if you are next to a college or university, it's great. And, or food service, even small food service, not a full restaurant, but something that you can do light tapas or, you know, an amenity to the guests who have traveled a long ways. That's all just been turned on its head. All universities and most universities and colleges are still debating and they're whether they're going to open or not. And it's, you know, a month out where they're going to have to take in students. So that's a big hit to many B&Bs that depend on that. And of course, if you do large weddings, that's out. However, in the same breath, it is really exciting to see some bed and breakfasts who aren't that big and weren't that involved in weddings starting to do the weddings for, you know, 10 up to 15 people, socially distanced and everything else. These people want to get married. And so why not do it at a small venue just with your friends and family? So I am seeing success with a variety of inns in a variety of places doing that, where the larger wedding venues can't, you know, can't operate that way. Their facilities are too big. So that's encouraging.
Interesting. Yep.
Yeah.
All right, Steve, should we pivot to the crystal ball question? I know it's a really tough one right there because we didn't have our crystal balls in early March, but would love to hear.
I forgot to bring it.
Yeah. Yes. Life broken.
Well, I don't know. I'd like to make sure that we cover enough of the expertise of, you know, Marilyn and Elliot, you know, in terms of the buying and selling and, yeah, because to me, the advice and, you know, the podcast we recorded earlier that we didn't put out was probably covered most of that. You know, it was heavy in terms of what you suggest from a buyer or seller's perspective and, you know, and what you all, the value you provide to your clients. So, yeah, before we get into where things might be going for buyers and sellers, I would like to hear a little bit more about kind of what you all provide, what you all do. I just think people want to know about that. And there could be buyers and sellers out there that want to know, you know, about, you know, what should I be looking at? What's important if I'm thinking of selling or, you know, if I'm a buyer, what do I need to know about other than going to your class? But, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And if I could jump in first, Marilyn, and that is that for those buyers and sellers, certainly the lending environment right now with these rates, I mean, you should be able to get, and we're looking at three deals right now where the interest rate is 4.25 to 4.5. Now, to put it in perspective, Elliot bought his in quite a while ago, almost 30 years ago, and it was 11% or 11.5%. mortgage rate. I got down on my knees and I said, thank you.
So same here.
And so with 4.25 and the terms are, you know, we always like to get it fixed for 10 years. That's two of them are fixed for 10, one's fixed for 5, but they're 20-year mortgages, 20-year amortization. So it is, the lending is good. What, as a buyer, are certainly my advice, and this comes from our colleague, Rick Newman, who writes a lot of mortgages for bed and breakfast and country inns, is that the buyer is going to have to bring in more equity. So they're going to be looking for somebody, a couple that one of them is going to continue to work, or that they have quite a portfolio because the loan to value is going to be lower. In other words, instead of bringing 20%, the buyer bringing 20% into it, they're going to be looking to probably bring 30% in. So with that, if you have a buyer who has that, this is going to be an opportune time. And so to sellers, You have to realize, too, that I was talking to a couple of people. You just don't know who you're going to get as a buyer. Sometimes people have to depend on the business numbers. They have to look at those. It has to reach a certain cap rate, a certain NOI. But then there are others who just want to be in that place and in that property, and they're willing to pay for that. And the numbers are secondary. So if you have to get out because of health, or you're just tired, or whatever the reasons are, there's still buyers out there that if you have a property that's well positioned, maybe not the best cash flowing, there's still a buyer for you. It's that we see that all the time. So of course I'm optimistic. I'm a broker, right? That's my business. But we do see that, and I see enthusiastic buyers. Will there be sharks? Of course there'll be sharks. They're going to wait until after the fall, when this thing, you know, I think that it's going to get a little worse here because of the big spike. So, well, we're seeing it. States are closing down. So there'll be a trailing dive again, but they'll wait to see if they can get a deal. But then there's going to be an upturn with people's revenue and all of that. And you as a seller can say, look, here's what it can do. Here's what it did. And here's what it can do. This is a very unusual time. So I'm excited about it. I think we can help people sell and certainly get people into properties that want to go.
Now, Elliot did just bring his crystal ball. Did everyone hear his crystal ball? he was able to give you some thoughts. And I would concur with him. I mean, we just don't know, but we almost have to expect that there are spikes throughout the country until we can really get a handle on this through whatever means. There are buyers out there for a lot of different properties, but the ones that we work with that have strong numbers are going to have a much easier time in working with those lenders to move forward. Yes, there's always a buyer out there for each property, but as earlier mentioned, some of these smaller inns are going to sell as just real estate rather than as a business, because they really haven't supported a strong enough business along the way.
If you're an innkeeper owner now and you were thinking of, you know, selling prior to all of COVID, you know, all this stuff going down, you're probably looking at a year or two out anyway in terms of preparing for that as it is. So this maybe throws a kink in your plans, but isn't fundamentally what you would suggest to a future seller going to be pretty much the same? I mean, and what are those suggestions? What do I, you know, once COVID's over with, you know, I can maybe start focusing on some of that stuff even more now if I'm partially shut down for a while or whatever. Sure. What do you suggest to that potential seller that's thinking, you know, down the road a year or two?
There's probably a couple of things that we could focus on. A is the property maintained? Because often we run into obstacles where there might not be a very well-maintained property, and you're always going to then come across issues with that, whether it be through inspections and the due diligence of those buyers. So obviously during this time, you might have the time to really manage some of those maintenance issues that you haven't had the time in the past. So take care of your property. We're not saying to invest huge, huge amounts into building your asset value, but take care of your property. Fix the broken items. Know what your property needs to have done. At least, at the very least, have a plan for what you can do. The other thing is, don't stop marketing. If you plan to remain open and continue to be open, marketing is probably the crux of getting your numbers up and getting some of that strength going. So marketing should be at the top of what you are doing. Those are probably the two key things I would say as a seller of an inn that you can manage extremely well. And third, take care of your books. Take care of your record books. I can't tell you how often we'll say, well, can we take a look at your numbers, your P&Ls, your taxes? I haven't gotten around to that, or it's not all in order yet. So this is also the time to really manage your books.
Lenders are looking at 17, 18, and 19. They'll look a little bit at 20, but they, along with the appraisers, understand that 20 is a real blip on the radar screen. So let's take a look at 17, 18, and 19. Make sure those records are in good, strong order. And then, you know, get back to marketing so we can see some strength in coming back online when the businesses are coming online like they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree. Those three things are really important. And for now, as you look at your, you know, your fixed expenses of, you know, your debt service, your utilities, payroll, whatever those are right now as you're fixed, it's the variable costs that are very dependent on occupancy that you have, you really have to control those now, because you have to cut the burn rate, as they call it. You have to control those. And because revenues have been cut dramatically. So you do that, and certainly record keeping is paramount to all of this. And, you know, I would say that unfortunately, because we're 6 months into this now, appraisers are starting to look at 2020, Marilyn. And they just, yeah, that just started to happen. Because if it was 3 months, yeah, they'd sort of say, okay, it's a one-off. But they know that it's going to be...
It's here to stay for the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a while. And so they are looking at 2020, which is fine, so long as you have a plan. You know, you have a plan for this. You know, we've controlled our variable expenses and we've opened up new markets. We're doing small weddings. We are trying to go keyless, touchless, all of that. I just want to throw that in, that some of the inns that have had the most success are, you know, these touch-free properties where everything is electronic. And I noticed in two restaurants that I've been in both of them, I don't plan to go out anymore. I'm not going to expose myself, but they both had QR codes, you know, so that you could look at the menu on your phone instead of handling a menu. And so the more you can do and have ideas about that, the better. And that's what I have to say about that.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, so that's the seller's advice, but yeah, and you talk about buyers, and there might be some people jumping in just for real estate, you know, just to not do the in thing. And I guess there could be people on the cusp who've thought about being innkeepers, and now, wow, you know, there's a great bargain out there or whatever. But again, nothing's changed in terms of the fundamentals of being an innkeeper and what you should consider if you think you're going to make that plunge, because whether the demands for rooms, you know, at an inn or a place that you're looking at is high or low now, you know, it's still a difficult life to be an innkeeper. So what would you impart to people who are considering making the jump into innkeeping?
So as I mentioned a couple of times, is that they, you know, as a buyer, you're going to have more liquidity and more assets available to make a purchase. That aside, having a second income is also going to be really paramount in getting these things, in getting a financing done on a property that does cash flow. We always tell the buyers they really need to sit down and know exactly why they're doing it and where they want to live. And that's, you know, forget COVID. Try to forget COVID. It's not an easy thing to do. But, you know, did you want to live in Santa Fe before? Do you want to go to the, you know, Western Maine? Where do you want to live? What kind of lifestyle do you want to have? Because that is, you're not going to be happy if you don't want to live there. And certainly knowing as much as you can about marketing and things that are available to you, like the product that you have in the Frictionless app and other marketing tools, is really important to a buyer. There will be people out there, you know, waiting and looking for possible deals. The only advice I give to those people is that if you're trying to get a property that's compromised or maybe even in bankruptcy, it is a process. It is very long, tedious, hard to do those kind of things. But that there'll be opportunities. I mean, I hope I didn't sound pessimistic in saying that we'll see some foreclosures and things. That always happens. I mean, that happens in any downturn. It happened in 2008 and 9. The good news is that it's probably not going to happen as deep as that one. This is a really sharp thing, but everybody's in the same boat and they're being thrown a lifeline with PPP and other loans. So that didn't happen in 08 and 09. So I don't think we'll see as much of it. I think what I've seen is health reasons. So Marilyn, take over.
Yeah, and I would agree as well, because if you look at the demographics of our innkeepers, they all tend to be a little bit older because they got in this as a second career. And they, I'm just finding some of the inns are saying, I don't want to pursue this at this point because of COVID. It's compromising to me. So those could be the opportunities for buyers right now. I'm working on one particular property that's in exactly that situation. And I've got buyers who want it. We're just trying to find a good lending opportunity for them. So the buyers are out there. Some have good resources, and those with second incomes, man, they can write their own ticket because they just have all of their bells and whistles in line. There are those that are a little bit more stretched or might not have that second income, and that's what lenders look at. Lenders don't want a whole lot of risk. So they're looking at the real estate value of the property in case that business doesn't survive COVID or whatever. And they are looking at the strength of the buyer coming in and what kind of experience they might be bringing. We talk to them and counsel them on that. And they're just looking at how might we do this and minimize risk. So that's what it's about from a lending standpoint. And when we work with those buyers, we have to always start thinking how that lender might look at it. That's our biggest obstacle to get through. Even though the terms are rather wonderful this day and age, we have to be able to prove to the lender that there's minimal risk for them to be able to lend on a property and lend to a buyer.
Makes sense. Yeah.
And one last thing is certainly, it's market driven. So if a market is overbuilt, of which there are some destinations that were overbuilt with hotels and everything else, the lenders are less likely to lend on hospitality. So you have to look at the market really well to see where it's going and where the opportunities are.
Okay. Matt, you want to bring it on home?
Yeah. Before we sign off, though, it seems like these were our parting shots, but I always like to ask this anyway. Marilyn and Elliot, any last thoughts here before we take it out?
Hang in there.
It's an exciting time. We will get through this. That my crystal ball says we will get through this. Will there be hot spots? Absolutely. I think we just have to expect that it's going to be a bumpy ride along 2020. But at some point in time, this too shall pass. And the strong ends will come out of this okay. They're figuring out how to get through the COVID environment. For our buyers, they're also the ones who want to pursue this. Man, more power to them in this year. I've got to give them a lot of credit for having the entrepreneurial spirit that they do. We too will work with them to see that they can get to the other side safely and continue on the path of success.
And awesome. Put your health first. That's my parting word. In whatever you're doing, don't sacrifice your health.
Yeah, wow. Great parting words from both of you. And our guests for this episode of the Frictionless Innkeeper podcast were Marilyn Bushnell, the founder of Bushnell Services, and Elliot Dalton, who are both innkeeping consultants and brokers specializing in helping people buy and sell inns. And both executives were kind enough to re-record their podcast with us. We originally spoke with them in early March, but the world certainly has changed. And both Marilyn and Elliot brought some very candid and great insights into the current state of the marketplace and how things will possibly shake out in the future for innkeepers. And we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Frictionless Innkeeper podcast brought to you by the Frictionless Guest app. If you wish to learn more, please visit frictionlessguest.com. Once again, that's frictionlessguest.com. And Marilyn, Elliot, and Steve, thanks for your time today.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Matt and Steve and Marilyn.
Thanks, Elliot. Thanks, Marilyn. We appreciate it.